This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Passing Judgment. We are recording this conversation on Thursday, October 2nd. We are now in the government shutdown. We don't know how long it's going to last, but I wanted to bring you inside how we got here, what's happening right now, and where we're likely headed. So to have that conversation with me, I'm pleased to introduce Nicholas Wu. He's a congressional reporter at Politico with a focus on the House of Representatives. In his roughly 5 years of covering Capitol Hill, he's covered President Trump's impeachment trials, the congressional response to the COVID pandemic, the fallout from the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the Capitol, the debate over President Biden's legislative agenda, and the 2024 election, among many other issues on the Hill. Nicholas, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for passing judgment.
And thanks so much for having me, Jessica.
So I want to start at the very beginning here, which is people have seen the headlines, the federal government shut down. And I'm sure at this point it feels obvious to you, but what specifically does this mean? It means we needed to create another budget this year and we couldn't come to an agreement?
So there's a way things are supposed to work around here, and that's that the Appropriations Committee in the House and Senate, this is the committee that draws up how much every single agency will spend. Each division of that committee was supposed to have passed its own bill related to funding, you know, however amount for each agency. So the Pentagon will get this much, the HHS will get this much, HUD, and so on. And in theory, all of this is supposed to be wrapped up by the end of the fiscal year, which is September 30th. That didn't happen this year. The House and Senate were not able to come to agreement in time on their own appropriations bills. And this brings us to now, where in the absence of that, normally what might happen is what's called a continuing resolution. Basically, in a piece of legislation, it's always very short to just kick the can down the line, is introduced, and that's passed. But this time around, Democrats in the Senate basically voted down the Republican written continuing resolution bill because Democrats wanted a number of different things, but chiefly among them provisions on healthcare and then guardrails on the Trump administration's executive authority included in this bill. And so, you know, we're now several days into this shutdown and there's no clear way out.
So, Nick, it feels like deja vu all over again in a little bit of the sense of, I know we've talked about CRs before, not me and you, but us collectively. And it seems like every few years we're here where either it's a question of will the government shut down or it shuts down for a short period of time. Or, I mean, back in the 1990s during the Clinton era, obviously it was a fairly lengthy shutdown. Is this just happening more often, or does it feel like it's happening more often?
It's a big consequence of the very narrow legislative majorities that are in Congress these days. I mean, right now, you know, we got to remember it's a 53-47 Senate with Republicans in control, and then in the House, you know, it's only a handful of members that make up the Republican majority, and so it makes it that much harder to pass all of this legislation. And then for that matter, it requires minority party buy-in on government funding bills because of the filibuster in the Senate, which requires 60 votes to advance a piece of legislation. Remember, there's only 53 Republicans in the Senate, so they need at least 7 Democrats to get anything over the finish line. And you know, chiefly among the Democratic complaints about this whole appropriations process was that they were not sufficiently clued in. They were not brought into the process. You know, the meeting that congressional leaders on both sides of the aisle held with President Trump on Monday was basically the first formal sit-down they've had to talk about government funding, or really that much at all, so far in President Trump's term. And so it's not really a recipe for a lot of bipartisan deal making, even though by all accounts, with the majorities as narrow as they are, that might be a place to do it.
So basically, election night or a few days after election day, when everything is called, if it is a narrow majority, we should be thinking we might have a government shutdown, and then add to that an apparent breakdown in communications. And here we are with our perfect storm. Now, I think people hear shutdown and it's hard to make sense exactly of what that means in the short term. So for instance, I just heard my mail carrier drop off the mail. I'm still getting mail. What are the services that are halted essentially almost immediately? What does it mean for people who are listening to the podcast and maybe they're not federal government workers? Maybe they don't rely on a routine basis on the federal government for subsidies or entitlements. How is the average American going to feel this?
It really depends on where they interact with the federal government and in what way. Since the way these shutdowns go is that it's really up to each agency to decide, you know, what is quote unquote essential versus non-essential in terms of their workforce. And so say you're taking a flight. The FAA is not stopping its work of air traffic control. However, the air traffic controllers might not get paid after a certain time. Or, you know, say take the judiciary. The judiciary won't necessarily stop running, but like, you know, they might have to do their work without pay. And then, you know, of course, the military. The military will have to go without pay. You know, here in Washington, D.C., there's you know, thousands of federal workers who are now furloughed. There's like plenty of restaurants and bars and whatnot around here that are hosting you know, discounts and specials for federal workers. But in total, this really amounts to a big disruption of federal services, depending on what sort of way you're trying to interact with the government.
So what I've also heard is that healthcare premiums could go up pretty dramatically in certain places in the short term. Could you walk us through, could you connect the dots between the government shutting down and people are going to have to pay more for healthcare, I think, depending on the type of healthcare that they have?
This is one of the big Democratic demands heading into this whole shutdown fight. Basically, there's this series of enhanced healthcare subsidies for insurance plans that were bought through the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare exchanges that are set to expire at the end of the year. And so there's some very real concern that these premiums could spike if these subsidies are not renewed. And, you know, in kind of the way that like congressional deal making works, this is kind of the proximate thing that both sides of the aisle, in some way, shape, or form, are interested in working on together and see as something that could help sweeten the deal for any sort of legislation to reopen the government. Democrats are arguing for an extension of these subsidies at a minimum as part of their demands. The problem is there's a lot of pressure on the right to do away with these subsidies altogether because you know, conservatives see these as some, you know, a vestige of COVID. It's part of something that they don't like to begin with, the Obamacare exchanges. It's a very tricky situation for Republican leadership because, you know, they're stuck between conservatives who don't like these and then purple district lawmakers who feel some very real political pressure from their constituents to act on it. But in terms of what this means for your own insurance premiums, if you're on an Affordable Care Act insurance plan, there is a very real concern that, you know, even if Congress comes to a deal later, notices for these premiums could start going out soon and people might change their own healthcare plans and, you know, insurance accordingly.
So that's really helpful in thinking through, one, what caused the stalemate in the beginning, and then two, what really could be one of the many repercussions. You've been covering this for a while now. You have some great pieces. I think a piece out today about Hakeem Jeffries and his changing style, maybe in strategy, that I'd love to talk about. I'd also love to get your thoughts just now on how you think this is playing politically for both parties. Obviously, the Republicans want the shutdown to be blamed on the Democrats and vice versa. Are we, based on your reporting, at a place where if you support the Democrats, you support the Democrats, and this shutdown really isn't moving the needle much? I know we're having this conversation October 2025, but it's never too soon to think about how this could play in the midterms as well.
Part of what makes this shutdown really difficult for both sides is that they're both banking on public opinion swaying in their direction to help them win the shutdown fight overall. There's some polling that's gone out so far that has showed that voters will blame Republicans for the shutdown. But, you know, we're only a few days into this, and that could very much change depending on what both parties say and do in the coming days. It's part of why we've seen Hakeem Jeffries, you know, as I wrote about this morning, or yesterday morning, rather, as a who's been a very careful, collected leader so far in his relatively short time as leader of House Democrats. But he's taken this shutdown fight as an opportunity to really lean into a much more aggressive kind of stance than, you know, the folks are used to seeing from him. And in part, this is perhaps a reaction to a very real desire among the Democratic base to see a leader who will more aggressively take on Trump and Republicans. And then for that matter, it's also a way for to help him build a much more national profile. There's some public polling showing that, you know, a little under half Americans don't actually know who Hakeem Jeffries is. And he's very much hoping to use this, using Trump as a foil, seeing as Trump has, you know, tweeted memes at him and the like, to build a larger presence out of it. Now, in the context of the broader shutdown fight, it remains to be seen how this is going to shake out. I mean, Republicans are banking on the fact that for once in all of the different Washington shutdown fights I've covered, for once, the Republicans are playing the role of the party that wants to just continue operating the government at existing funding levels. They're not arguing for big cuts. They're not trying to attach other provisions in the past that have been, you know, so-called poison pills for Democrats. And so we'll have to see how this plays out.
So right now, as I've mentioned a couple of times, we're really only 2 days into this particular shutdown. You and I were talking before we started recording, and I said some version of that we want to get the episode out quickly because things obviously can change. I think we both had the sense, your sense is much more educated than mine on this, that things might not change dramatically in the next day or two. Could you bring us inside a little bit and talk to us about what's happening today? What's planned for tomorrow and this week? Are there meetings happening? Are there places where there's rumblings that there's going to be some agreement? Or does this just look like we are still in the complete breakdown, no communications part of the story?
Right now, we very much are in that kind of no communications part of the story. Democrats have been saying over the past few days, ever since the Monday meeting between congressional leaders in the White House, that there's really been no contact. And so at the leadership level, there's basically been no formal negotiation, pretty much no contact. And in terms of resolving this whole standoff, it's going to take some time, and that's part of that is just a consequence of the congressional calendar right now. The Senate has been in town this week. In an effort to pressure Democrats, they've taken votes each day on the that so-called clean stopgap funding bill, the continuing resolution, to see if any other Democrats will break ranks and vote for it. And so far, only a small handful have, not enough to get it over the finish line. The House is not in town. And so the very earliest the House would be able to act on other legislation would be next week when they're scheduled to return. But, you know, in terms of things below the surface, there's a small group of senators who has begun some very informal talks in kind of traditional Capitol Hill parlance. This is what we call a gang, about a way to resolve this whole standoff and find a way forward on the Affordable Care Act tax credits. But the question is whether or not this will be something that is ultimately blessed by congressional leadership, or for that matter, can present an option that's palatable to folks on both sides of the aisle who you know, otherwise might not be inclined to, if you're a Republican, support the extension of these tax credits, or if you're a Democrat, support reopening the government without getting all these other policy provisions that Democrats are asking for.
Sounds like there's a number of layers to this. I know it's hard to predict out, but this is really helpful in thinking that nothing's going to change over the next 24, 48 hours. I mean, the House isn't even there. When we think about, you know, people ask me this all the time, even though it's not my area of expertise, how long is this going to last? Do you have any sense in covering the Hill and talking to the people who are going to be the players, talking to the members of the so-called gang? I know this is my least favorite question when it comes to legal cases, but can we predict? Are we looking weeks? Are we looking months? And at what point is somebody going to blink? And do we have a sense of who that might be?
I think the conventional wisdom is that this very much could take weeks. You know, for the reasons we've been talking about, the incentives for both parties to blink right now just aren't there. Democrats think, you know, they have all this polling showing that voters blame Republicans. Republicans think that the voters will punish Democrats when, you know, the people's lives are affected by the government being closed, or when the mass firings that the administration is threatened will have to happen because of a shutdown come into effect. And so the longest shutdown in history was 35 days, and that was in the back half of Trump's first term. We don't know if it'll go that long, but right now, I mean, it looks this shutdown is almost certainly going to go through the weekend into next week, since the Senate is probably not going to be in town over the weekend, so they can't vote on any legislation to reopen the government. You know, the House doesn't come back until next week as well. But the question going through all this will be whether or not, as the Senate keeps on voting on the same government funding bill, whether or not any Democrats are going to break ranks. In March, there were 10 Democrats who voted with almost all Republicans, to advance a Republican-backed government funding bill. They faced a huge backlash inside their party at the time, but you know, those would be the folks to watch. And these are ones from purple states like New Hampshire, institutionalists like, you know, Angus King of Maine, who's an independent. And for that matter, Chuck Schumer, the minority leader, and Dick Durbin, who's the number two Senate Democrat, were part of that group as well, because, you know, they saw more value in keeping the government open rather than, you know, forcing a shutdown and letting the Trump administration have free reign over what to do with a shuttered government. But, you know, right now, no one's showing any signs of blinking.
And it's really interesting to think about the fact that two of the Democratic leaders in the Senate, Chuck Schumer and Dick Durbin, do look like they are more willing than maybe the rest of the Democratic senators. And maybe, I don't know, the rest of the Democratic electorate to say, let's make a deal. Let's get out of this shutdown. And so it will be fascinating to see, obviously, what happens in the next few weeks, but also how this plays out politically. Now, Nick, you've been covering the shutdown so well. You've been covering the Hill with a lot of nuance. And just wondering if we could take a step back, is there something you wish that people understood about, maybe to start with just the specifics of the shutdown, why it has occurred, what's happening right now, what's likely to occur? I know we've gone through a lot of that, but is there something where you think, oh, every time I sit down to report this, I really want people to understand X or Y?
I think I would really like people to understand a lot of the process around this. And we talked about, you know, the talking point that Democrats always cite is that, you know, Republicans control the House and the Senate, which is technically true. But, you know, we got to remember that the filibuster is still there. And it's something that, like, I think is kind of arcane to anyone who's, you know, not around Capitol Hill. And that's, you know, perhaps a good thing if you don't have to think that hard about the filibuster. But the reason we're in this whole mess is that, you know, you do need 7 Democratic votes to advance any kind of legislation through the Senate. And, you know, that creates all sorts of different pressures and incentive structures for Democrats to break ranks with the rest of their party, or for that matter, if and when the time comes for Republicans to extend some sort of olive branch across to the other side. And, you know, it's something that we try to reflect in all our stories. But I think, like, for folks that are just tuning in to how Congress works, this is the kind of thing that Schoolhouse Rock never entirely taught us, right? What happens with a government shutdown, you know, and the legislative filibuster.
And now I'm going to end with an even broader question, which is there something you wish people understood about covering the Hill at this moment? This is without putting my thumb on the scale, this is a strange time in our country's politics and policies. And I assume that to say that you've been kept busy is an understatement. Is there something you feel like it just completely gets lost in the headlines?
I think something that is important to note about covering Congress right now, there have been some recent columns about this, but I think in the practical reality of covering Capitol Hill is that the center of both parties has really been hollowed out, at least in the Senate and to a lesser degree in the House as well. Part of this is because if you're a purple district lawmaker, people lose re-election and are replaced by someone from the opposite party. But with Trump in office and Democrats boxed into this position on their own side, the incentives for bipartisan deal making are just much smaller than they would have been for folks, even a few decades ago.
That makes a lot of sense. Nick Wu of Politico, thank you so much for spending time with us, walking through everything that's happening now. I have a much better understanding of why we're here and what's likely to happen next. And I'm so grateful for you sharing your expertise with us.
Thank you so much for having me.